Welcome back, everyone. We are very lucky to have public science for the public tonight. Kevin, you were just describing your understanding of what goes on in the brain under electrical stimulation.
Yes, so it's been well established. You know, this is decades old research going back to the sort of 30s and 40s where they started to do these electrical self-stimulation tests, etc. And the reward, and it's not just reward when talking about these networks, it's important to understand the principle of salience. The brain is keyed to look for rapid changes in the environment, and if they get coupled with rewarding, quote unquote, stimuli, then what that will do is begin to shape the neural architecture to pay more and more attention to try to repeat the effects. And the neural pathways involved have been extensively mapped. And, you know, one of the common things that you'll hear, you'll pick up a magazine and they'll say that chocolate stimulates the same parts of the brain that sex does, right? And, you know, they'll show some images of the brain and particularly an area called the nuclear accumbens lighting it up. And this is an area that we know is involved in drug addiction. One of the approaches that we can use to try to reduce people's cravings, etc., is to target nucleus accumbens either with electrodes directly, or there are procedures now that have evolved where they're literally walk-in procedures where after they've done the mapping and the MEG signaling to look for areas within that reward circuitry, and using ultrasound, they're literally able to essentially ablate the regions within the reward circuitry that are responsible for the craving, the desire to take whatever drug of choice that the person is addicted to. And it's these pathways that are the target for corporations producing products that induce habit-forming behaviors. And the everyone is sort of subject to their own reward-directed, goal-directed behaviors. And, you know, I'm listening to the adverts that you're playing, and there's a whole bunch about there in coffee, etc. And are video games any worse than coffee or cigarettes or any other of what we consider, or nicotine, I should say, to be the socially acceptable drugs of choice? There's a lot of important cellular molecular biology that goes on within these circuits. Of course, there's different scales that you can sort of look at. You can look at the macro networks, and you can get down to the cellular, the synaptic interactions. But the basic, we have a fairly good handle on why or how this addictive behavior emerges. And, you know, we're in an age where we can directly intervene in the brain to try to reduce that. Now, you know, along with that comes a bunch of ethical concerns, which is in China, if they know you have a drug problem, alcoholic, etc., they can force these procedures on you. And someone who's worked a lot in that domain and worked specifically in nucleus accumbens and those reward pathways and trying to treat neuropsychiatric disorders. I find that very concerning, considering the trajectory that we've been on over the last, particularly 4 years. There's a push towards for the common good ethics over the sovereignty of the individual. And, you know, this might be an extreme example, but, you know, if you were, you became so concerned about your son's gaming habits that you thought, well, if there was a walk-in procedure where they could see the areas of the brain that were hyperactivated, if you like, would you force your son down that pathway to try to combat what you think is a maladaptive behavior? These are very difficult and contentious questions to wrestle with, and we're entering into a strange new world as a consequence. I don't know if you have any particular questions about the addiction pathways, etc. I hope what I was saying was making sense.
Well, yeah, it's a good thumbnail. I mean, I think that all of this is evident with people that have children and what happens when there's something digital in the room, and how to deal with it and how to manage it, because the entire world is now set up to get everyone hooked in and part of this social dependence, which I would call a communitarian culture. It's all one way of going at it, and we had no choice because it's been dropped on us. So, yeah. Dr. Paul? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add a quick caveat to that, that I know I've been thinking and speaking about this a lot recently, which is just that the emergence of these types of technologies, it's, as I weigh all the factors, it might almost be an inevitability with respect to, as automation comes, the computation becomes ever more efficient, the realism of immersive experiences through things like VR, that communitarianism might be the natural outgrowth of these complex systems interacting together. Now, the question becomes, how do we control the emergence of what type of communitarianism is going to emerge? Who decides what's the or who's the arbiter of what is the common good in this instance? And that's where the danger lies at this moment. And I'll pass you a sort of moral and ethical conundrum here, which is, if they manage to automate so much of the normal jobs that most people would have been or would have been used to fill up people's time, so that there aren't the jobs there, is it unethical to give them access to these immersive experiences where it prevents them from going towards more potentially destructive behaviors? Is it better to have someone focused on video games or focused on trying to score fentanyl? These are the questions we have to be thinking about. And I don't have easy answers to this, but this is how people need to be thinking at the moment. And it may just, the emergence of this technology, it's just, and it seems like a fait accompli already. I have to work very hard to limit my children with respect to computers. They live for access to computers. But that's the world we live in now.
Absolutely. It's been this way for at least two decades. You know, it becomes a different subset of population that have grown to be part of what's been constructed for them. And it's hard for our generation. And Dr. Paul, who, you know, you've been a professor. You've taught students. You've saw how people would learn and enjoy science. And the generation of academia and the sciences, guidelines, oversight, the WHO, the FDA, the FCC. Stop me now. Dr. Paul, are you there? Do you have a comment?
not really. No, I don't. I'm sorry. I think, you know, I don't disagree with anything's been said, but I just, no, I don't have a comment. I'm sorry.
So I'm just looking at a paper right now, Biological Psychiatry, right? 110,000 drug overdoses occurred in the U.S. in 2022. Okay. What do we do in this instance? Do we just say, oh, it's their own choice, we've got no right to interfere in what they're doing? Or is there, should there be mechanisms put in place to say, oh, we can see that you're going down what we know is a very destructive pathway, not only for yourself, but the families that have to deal with the mess. And if we have a, you know, it's a relatively new treatment with ultrasound ablation, no anesthesia involved or anything, you just walk in half an hour and they can ablate and control, and I mean, of course, there would be counseling still involved, etc. But is that something that we should consider to try to stop 110,000 people dying from what I consider to be chemical warfare being waged on the U.S. population?
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. Yes,
please do.
All right. When Henry Lai was doing his studies about 30 years ago, there were also two studies published, and I believe they were published by other researchers, that showed that EMF exacerbated the actions of addictive drugs. So whether EMFs themselves are addictive is still can be questioned, but there is... really fascinating evidence that EMF exposures, you know, do exacerbate the action of addictive drugs. This could have a major role in the opioid crisis because, you know, if you have variable EMF exposures, you know, sometimes they're stronger, sometimes they're weaker, and you're getting major changes in how people are taking drugs, how their bodies are responding, you could easily lead to situations where people die of overdose, of, you know, apparent overdoses, simply because the EMFs are making them overdoses.
Well, not to be too contrarian, when dealing with fentanyl and carfentanil, again, it's a rank ordering of what is the issue here. And, you know, I don't recognize the U.S. that I lived in 20 years ago that I see emerging on the screens with, like I say, I consider, well, fentanyl was designed in biowarfare programs as a sort of incapacitation agent. And if you've got people who are IV injecting these compounds, I would focus on the pharmacokinetics, the molecular biology that we can definitively point at and say, this is where we should be putting our resources to try to stop 100,000 people dying every year. And
you're in fact contradicting one of the positions you were taking before, that is, there may be multiple causes.
No, so we're talking specifically about drug addiction in this instance, and what is
when you have evidence that EMFs can exacerbate the action of addictive drugs. That's so, a big deal.
Again, I get it. You've got a sort of hobby horse around EMF, but
No, not at all. I'm interested in biological mechanism. And when I see that EMFs have a role, I think one needs to look at that. I'm not saying there's nothing else going on here. I'm not saying fentanyl is not important.
Right, so surely we should be tackling the fentanyl, understanding the neuroscience that we can see and reproduce. And if there's a way to make an intervention that's low impact, that could potentially save that person's life, then I'm not sure where the EMF argument comes into this when we've gotten a bucket full of concrete data with respect to pharmacology, impact on the body, and the social fallout that we're seeing on the streets of the U.S. I understand you're in Washington State, right? That's you have Portland probably very close to you. Again, what do you, how do you take few and precious resources and use them to the maximum benefit? And is it worth spending $1 million on Gauss meters walking around the fentanyl dens to see if there's a correlation with people who are dying en masse because of this this drug exposure? Surely that money would be better used in trying to funnel people towards trying to get them into a situation where they make an informed choice that, yes, they should perhaps make the decision to go through that procedure to try to combat their addiction.
I do agree with that. We are coming into a break. We're going to take calls at the bottom of the hour, if that's okay with my guests. Sure. I do think that there's a bigger picture of how this has been planned in the United States, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit when we come back. So stay tuned. My guests, Dr. Martin Paul and Dr. Kevin McCarron. Thanks for listening.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop and lift? What in the world is an Easoff dropping then?
Our Easoff is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Easoff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Easoff?
Go to easoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
This is Immunize Wisely. I'm Jenna. I'm hosting for Ingrid. We are talking about EMFs. We are also talking about the fentanyl overdose situation in the United States. I do think that, you know, the economy has something to do with it, the lockdowns, the depression. I myself, one of my son's childhood school friends, she overdosed. Depression, couldn't get her she couldn't get a prescription, and she chose fentanyl and died. So those things do happen, but for our young people that are looking out, looking for some sort of future, I think it is pretty dismal at this point because of the economic situation that we all live in. So I do think that that controlled demolition is at work. However, I think leaning back towards science and what we do know and what we can understand and integrate into our lives to make better choices and the choices for our children and our children's children is really important. So I do welcome any callers. If you have a question or a comment on this conversation, we are... The phone number here is 512-248-8252. So if you're interested in joining the conversation, you are welcome. And, 248-8252. 512-248-8252. And I also want to give kudos to McCarran's Dojo site and the platform WTYL. It's an independent platform, multi-streaming, and I want to encourage people, if they're creating content, to bring it to that platform, because we don't really know how much longer these channels like YouTube are going to be. The censorship is all over. So, I mean, thinking ahead towards still having communications in this war on information age, where we want to interact with people that are seeking the truth, I recommend WTYL. So,
just to help people, wetalkyoulisten.com or WTYL.live, and sign up, start aggregating information about all of these threats to our health. The censorship is only going to get worse, I'm afraid.
And Dr. Paul, we had a question in the chat room if you wanted to recommend one of, like, your best paper, like a paper that people would start with. If they, do you recommend anything that you've published? For communications with you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's hard to pick those out, but let me just suggest a couple of them. One is that I published a paper on the neuropsychiatric effects of EMFs, and that's been very widely cited. It's, I think, around 260 citations at this point, and going up rapidly. So it's been widely recognized as an important paper. Another paper that I think you might look at is the paper I published on Alzheimer's disease and EMS, where there are 18 different types of evidence which collectively produce an extraordinarily powerful evidence that EMS, in fact, cause Alzheimer's disease, including extremely early onset Alzheimer's disease, which before we had EMS was extraordinarily rare and then getting more common. So those are a couple of papers.
I'm sort of looking through your bibliography. Is there some direct experimental work that you could point to that you've done?
That I've done? No, what I've done is I've reviewed other people's experimental work. That's what I've been doing. So,
right,
no,
so it's all review papers.
You know, yeah, they're review papers, but they're synthetic review papers. That is, they make arguments about mechanism from evidence that's in the literature.
Okay.
Okay, we're coming up at the bottom of the hour break, and like I said, if you want to call in and join in the conversation, it's 512-248-8252, and thank you for tuning in. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I am Jenna. Brian just had this fantastic idea that maybe somehow we can upload Dr. Martin Paul's papers to WTYL. Just throw them all up there. Because he has traveled Finland, Norway, Estonia. You testified in the Estonia Parliament. You went through Canada. All these other countries were like, we need to know. They wanted to be the leaders in the tech, and then they found out all of the issues that it also incorporated. Fantastic work. You're a giant in your field, Dr. Paul. I appreciate your work.
Could I just say something about what was raised before about my background and what kind of work I do?
Please do.
I was an experimental scientist for well over 30 years. I know very well what kinds of problems occur when one does experimental studies, and how you have to be very careful to avoid various kinds of traps that lead you to false conclusions. So I'm very well aware of those kinds of things. But what I've been doing since around the year 2000 is that I've been doing mainly analyses of literature on medical issues. And what I find is that there's a huge amount of information that is important information that's essentially being ignored, because everybody, or almost everybody in science, is busy doing their own thing. And they don't have the time or the expertise to look at wider issues and see how things fit together. So I've worked on chemical effects in biology, and I've also worked on EMF effects, and I've also worked on regulatory systems that help protect us from these threats. And all those things I believe are quite important. That's all I want to say.
Thank you. So I know we have Chris. Here we go. We have Lynn in Maryland on line 9. Lynn, what's on your mind?
Hear me? Thank you very much, Jenna. You're amazing. Can you hear me?
I do. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And my heart goes out to Brian. I'm so sorry to hear about his daughter. And I want to thank Dr. McCarron and Dr. Paul. This is phenomenal. Actually, there's a good book. I don't remember the title of it. I think the author's name was Caracas, a psychiatrist, about video addiction. Sam can give you my number if you want to call me. Also, I have a book by another person who runs a camp in my area for kids who have a problem with devices, and they have a summer camp with no devices. And actually, I can be your lab rat. I don't have any devices. I don't use the internet, and I used to live on it. And the thing about it is that it's a subtle addiction, Unlike alcohol or drugs, you don't go through withdrawal like that, but it's just as bad. Think about the conditioning with people who can't have their hand away from their phone. They have to have their phone within reach. One of the other things, and Dr. Paul might be able to address this, but I believe that wireless actually causes nitric oxide in the brain, and just like with chemical exposure, B12 is a nitric oxide scavenger, and so a lot of times people will become deficient in B12 who are exposed to chemicals, and I'd imagine it's the same way with the wireless, but it's like we're living somewhere between an electronic dog fence and a giant pesticator, you know, and this is controlling technology. When I got offline and I was already getting away from wireless, but I learned one night listening to an interview, and it wasn't even the point of the interview, but the woman had been talking to somebody in Silicon Valley. This was in 2017. And what she had been told was that they were starting to run virtual reality in the background of all browser screens. So computers, your phone. What I'd already researched VR after I'd gone down the wireless rabbit hole. And your brain has no firewall against virtual reality. Whatever your brain takes in, it believes is utter absolute truth. So think about if you're playing a game with goggles on. The thing about that interview, and I was listening to an encore about the interview, was the woman said, oh, but he told me it wasn't a problem because it's not like you're wearing goggles, not like you have a lens. And I was like, oh, my God. And first, there was something else about it. I sat straight up like 2 in the morning and went, oh, my God, why did we have screensavers? And your eyeballs have lenses. So whatever is there, you don't consciously know it, but your brain is taking it in. And I can tell you the thing about this technology, it takes close to 2 months to recover from it, and you don't even know how addicted you are. And look at our young people. They are cognitively damaged. There was an NIMH study, I don't know, 5-6 years ago on older people, and it showed an absolute cognitive decline to the point that they advised older people not to have a cell phone in the same room with them during the day when they were doing something because it was a measurable decline.
I know you can go on and on, but I do have a couple other callers.
Okay, I'll let you go. I just thank you so much.
Okay. Now we have Sherry in Kansas on line 11.
Jenna. Hi, Jenna and guests.
Hi.
Problem with this wireless is that, you know, it affects everyone, whether you realize it or not. And, you know, we should have a choice. Things should be wired just for that reason. But, Dr. Paul, I think that, and this would be really hard to quantify, but you know how they say we have a lot of us is not even really part of our DNA. I'm talking about our microbiome. And, and you know, your microbiome disruption, it can affect your mental state too, not to mention cause disease in other ways. But, you know, that would be very hard to do a study on that. But, you know, given that with these active denial systems that they have, these, you know, these weapons that they can use on us, crowd control weapons, weapons that make you crap your pants and stuff like that, change your emotions. You know, and the only reason they want this wireless is for commerce, really, so they can gather more information on it and control us. But if you're going to look into that, you should verse yourself in what they call pleomorphism, if you're not familiar with that term, because pleomorphism leans more towards the terrain theory of disease as opposed to the germ theory, and you have to get back to people like Raymond Reif and Gaston Nassens and, oh, what's that German guy? I can't think of his name right now, but it's been around a long time, but it just throws a wrench in the germ theory. So that's my comment. And
well,
I'll hang
thank
up.
You.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, sure. Kevin, do you have a comment on that one?
Yeah, a couple. We live in an age where certainly things like biome could be tested relatively easily now with next-gen sequencing, nanopore sequencing in response to exposure to EMF. We can also use it in response to things like viruses and bacteria. I can assure you that as important as terrain is, there are pathogens. They do have well-defined effects. We can track them, and we can take them down literally to the atomic scale in terms of understanding them. Like I say, there's a it's not there's a technical jump that people need to make in trying to understand what the latest data says. And these things are certainly open to testing, and I can be in a position to do that. I would just try to encourage people to try to be very critical of what it is that you're listening to. Just because it makes you feel good doesn't mean that it's right. You need experimental data. You need hard data, hard numbers, and you need reproduction in those data sets. That's my comment.
Thank you. Next, we have Chris in Florida on line 5. Chris, how are you?
Yeah, I think that those who can't feel the electromagnetic fields are experiencing an emotional tension that people like myself can feel. Like when I'm waking up or in deep meditation, I can feel a pulse going, and then just it lets up for a moment, and it continues on. And that emotional tension as the pulse is going on is really in contrast to the brief moment that it lets up and then it picks up again as if, oh, here we go again. You know, there's no reprieve. And so it's been on my mind that I feel like a lot of people are resorting to unhealthy habits of all kinds as a result of these electromagnetic pulses that they can't feel. And I think that I've gotten some relief by turning off at the switch box my bedroom circuits and any circuits in my home that I don't need. So I go to bed with a flashlight. And I do have, for many years, I've had four steps or filters for cleaning up the dirty electricity somewhat, mm-hmm. according to the meters. That I show that they really don't do a whole lot of maybe 20% remediation for the dirty electricity, and am looking at shielding materials to sew together for a bed canopy, which I posted in the chat room there, as well as a list of EMF, EMP protection retailers who sell remediation and assessment products for EMF. So if you want to see if you have any opinions on that particular shielding product I'm looking at, Swiss Shield Naturel Ultra, or if there's any other kind of bed canopy material you might suggest.
I'm not really ready to suggest specific ones, but I want to say something about how shielding works in general, in the broader sense. I think that shielding works mainly by disrupting the coherence of the EMFs. That is, when the EMFs bounce off of these little tiny metal fibers or these graphite fibers, what they do is they go off in various directions, and so the coherence of them gets disrupted so that they're much, much weaker in terms of their impact on the human body, and that's obviously very useful. The other thing I'd say is that you sound very much like a lot of different electromagnetic hypersensitive people, EHS people, and who've had very similar experiences to the ones that you described.
Well, I hope it doesn't get any worse. It's only when I wake up and I try to stay relaxed in order to try to assess the situation and do visualization, energization exercises as well, which I've noticed I can't actually drive down the readings on an RF meter or a gauze meter when I'm holding onto the antenna, because, of course, our bodies act as an antenna, by inviting in God's loving limitless prana or chi or orgone or Holy Spirit or whatever you'd like to call it. Spiritual techniques do help. I'm not sure if that has something to do with my sensitivity also. But if you know people, just as I said before in my in the past, that focus on your third eye and your heart as constantly as possible, and other spiritual techniques will show themselves. And I think that enhancing or reinforcing our aura is helpful. And you know, as I said, I could show a video I should post online of being able to bring down the RF meter and the gauze meter readings by doing at will. By inviting in God's love, basically, throughout my body to feel the sensations of tingling and warmth and vibration that I've been able to equalize throughout my body throughout the years, to and other visualization, energization exercises. So, I think people
who
are
we have a couple more callers. So I really
okay, I'll let you go with that. I just want to mention
this has been very validating. Yeah. We have had Shannon Rowan on, and apparently there's 3 million EHS people in the United States. They kind of found each other, and I hope that it doesn't get worse. That's right. And mostly it's simplifying. So we have John in New York on line 9.
Yeah, hello. First of all, I'd like to thank both of you for doing this again, you and Dr. Kevin. I was just wondering if any of you actually have any thoughts about, respirable shedding when you're out and about and in public places and so on, and any defensive countermeasures we can take. And if you've already covered that on the show, I apologize, and I'll just tune into it. I'll pull it up on the archives later.
Are you talking about vaccine shedding?
Yes.
So we have, there are a number of published papers already that have shown that spike protein will be aggregated in and released from cellular environments as exosomes. Exosomes will, they're incredibly small and will basically pass out through skin, body waste, etc. And so there is a possibility that they can get into the environment. There's a more concerning element around this shedding component, which is that the latest data shows that on part of the peptide segment that's translated both by the virus and the spike protein in these gene transfection technologies, there's a epitope on it that has now been shown to be catalyzing the prion protein into its scrapy form. And we know from these transmissible spongiform encephalopathy type diseases, think chronic wasting disease, that one of the primary mechanisms of their ability to transmit is the release of exosomes into the environment. And that's how it's spreading through the deer populations at the moment. And as an extra caveat to that, I would add, be very careful of the stories that you're seeing being pumped into the narrative control networks about chronic wasting disease, because this potentially might be a cover for them realizing that they have mass exposed billions of people to this prion catalyzing epitope. In terms of countermeasures, it's a difficult question to answer. The scientific literature will say that once infected, they are always invariably fatal. Are there ways to slow it down? Yes. But the we could be entering into what's called a super prion event, and a evolutionary bottleneck is about to be forced upon us. I would be
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, try your best to stay abreast of the information that's coming out, and follow people like myself who are trying to work through this data, trying to do the experiments to test if this is actually happening. We don't know. There's no motivation within the institutions to actually test this potential data point, because essentially they would be culpable for this mass exposure. This is all a consequence of biowarfare research, medical countermeasures research. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry post 9/11 and the anthrax attacks, and mm-hmm. it could be dragging us down a very dark path.
You spoke a moment ago of ways to slow it down. Any thoughts there? This would vary very significantly with each individual and their respective
genetics. Yes, it's a lot to do with your individual biology, the amount of exposure, route of exposure, your baseline
okay.
inflammatory state.
I'm sorry, we got to move on. We only have a couple minutes left, and I have two more callers.
Thank you.
I have Aman Jabi in Montana, line 5. Aman, thanks for calling.
Hi, Jenna. This is Aman here. Yeah. You know, I had a comment and then kind of a question. Comment was, I think there was a discussion on fentanyl and drugs. If you zoom out and look at the bigger picture that's being done by design in all the major cities and now in smaller towns across the U.S. And the whole idea is to, once you get enough people addicted and you get enough people screaming that the government should do more, this is the Hegelian dialectic at play, and the solution is going to be social impact investing. So in all these issues about how society is degenerating, the impact investors will come, they'll put money into the problem, and then while the problem is supposedly getting solved, whether it's through de-addiction camps or rehabilitation centers, etc., every human being is going to be monitored, measured, analyzed, managed, and monetized.
Yes, so this is very good point. Impact. That's where the 5G and more advanced communication networks.
All the technology is going to be used. Yeah, it's for data collection, and then simultaneously making money in this new international economic order of digital currencies related to your reputation capital,
yep.
and which are your social credit scores, and then your carbon footprint, etc. So that's one point I wanted to make. And the other was, at the highest level, the agenda is about control as well as making money for the trillionaires. And the control is going to come through the communitarian aspect. And it's going to be, self, as opposed to having a truly free self-governing society, the communitarian aspect will be a truly community-based policing. We won't need government. We'll just need artificial intelligence, which will control the community in order for individuals to lose any free will, whatever may be left in a few years. And that's the agenda. And my question, I think, on the communitarian issue was, I think one of the doctors had said, what kind of communitarianism will there be? Or I only see one kind.
Yeah, it's a very difficult set of conditions and variables to try to work through. Like I say, I think it almost seems inevitable with the direction that technology, it's so pervasive now, particularly in the first world. All across the planet, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it now, and it just may be I don't want to say natural, but just a consequence of complex systems interacting in a fashion that essentially is evolutionarily new, and it will just be an emergent property. The question is I would put this, that it's probably going to have some degree of flux, and it's going to be open to manipulation, or not manipulation, but the will of people that wish to engage in it and how it crystallizes into its final form. And now is the time to actually try to get organized to, you know, make sure that those predatory impact investors are constrained with how they are able to invade into your private space. The time
Absolutely.
Is now.
Absolutely. Don't buy it. Yeah. We have one last caller. It's Catherine. Yeah,
can I make a comment? I just wanted to thank Aman Jabi for raising these issues. That's all.
Yeah, very, very, very good call. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Our last caller is Catherine in Maine. Catherine?
Hi. I'm so glad that Aman called in. And I just wanted to say, please, Alison McDowell, A-L-I-S-O-N, McDowell on YouTube, syringeinthegears.com is her webpage.
Yes, she's brilliant.
She covers she covers the social impact investing very deeply also. She has a spot on RFK about some centers he's running, and you just have to look for it. But I just wanted to say, and I missed half the show on hold playing music, which was really aggravating. It wasn't playing the show on hold tonight, but... Seattle is Dying is a must-see video for everyone. And towards the end, about probably two-thirds through, there's a city council person that, you know, says they don't want solutions, period, end of story. And they show a solution that they put into place for some of these addicts, okay, that it's a rare find. I don't know if it still exists, but it was implemented in Providence, Rhode Island, very successfully. But, yeah, it's a great video, Seattle is Dying, Alison McDowell, Social Impact Investing, so much more. And I would just add this
as well. Sorry to interrupt, mm-hmm. because I know we're short on time, but this is all this impact investing, the ability to control people, it's all being leveraged through modern neuroscience and the understanding of reward pathways.
Yes, exactly. I understand that, and so does Alison. And Dr. Paul, I spoke with you from the retinology office after they put up the stuff. You know what I mean? My eyes rolled shut. And my retinologist was in the room. So I appreciate you very much. And I haven't had that happen again, but I did get out of that area. And I've met people that work near there, go to work early to get out of the heavy Wi-Fi in that relatively poor neighborhood just outside of Boston. I'm not kidding you. They leave because they feel so sick in that neighborhood I lived in. They go to work early because they go to work in a wealthy area.
This is RBN.
The show is over.
The Republic Broadcasting.
Thank you all for participating. Have a nice night.